In the lead up to winter, health experts warned that this year's flu season would be particularly brutal. But the intensity seems to have caught authorities off guard. Already we've seen close to 90,000 confirmed infections and 190 deaths, and we're still weeks away from the peak. Last week, concerns about a shortage of the flu vaccine prompted the government to order an additional 400,000 doses. Professor Brendan Murphy is Australia's Chief Medical Officer and joins us on RN Drive. Welcome, Professor Brendan Murphy.
Good evening.
Now, authorities warned us to expect a bad flu season. Is this worse than what you were expecting?
I don't think it's possible to tell at this stage. The unusual thing about this year's flu season is that it's started so early. We don't know whether it's a very early season that will peak earlier and may fade away, or whether it will continue for a lot longer. It's certainly much, much earlier than we've seen for several years. We've had more cases at this time this year than we had in our peak worst recent season of 2017. Now, of course, we had many, many more cases in 2017 over the whole year, but they mainly occurred in the usual August-September peak. So the one thing you can say definitely about flu is you can't predict. And this season may be a very early season that may fade away and not have the big late winter peak, or it may continue. We just don't know. That's why we recommend everybody get vaccinated and be prepared.
So last year we had about 12,000 cases at this stage. This year, almost 90,000. Is that the biggest jump you can say?
It's certainly the biggest early season that we have seen for some time. But remember, in 2017, we had 250,000 plus notified cases. Now, the notifications are obviously not all of the cases, because many cases of flu don't get properly lab diagnosed. But certainly this is a very unusual early season, and it's caught people a bit by surprise. We don't usually see the flu peaking until later, but we just cannot predict whether the total season will be bigger than, say, 2017, the same as or less than.
There have been close to 200 deaths. Is that unusually high given the number of infections?
Well, again, in 2017, we had over 1,000 deaths. Now, it's important to recognise that most of the deaths in every flu season are in the very elderly, and often people who are close to end of life with lots of comorbidities. But every year there are also, unfortunately, a small number of deaths in otherwise fit young people for reasons that we really don't understand, where flu seems to overwhelm the immune system of some people. But most of the deaths are in frail elderly people.
The federal government has ordered an additional 400,000 vaccines. Have those become available now?
Yes. So it's important to know this was the private flu market. We've not had any shortage in the government-funded vaccine market, the National Immunisation Program, so the free vaccines available for people at risk. That's not been in short supply. But the private market for people who pay the $20 or so for their vaccine, that was undersupplied. The manufacturers underestimated that market, but we have helped the manufacturers bring in an extra 400,000. In fact, further supplies on top of that have also been brought in to make sure that the private market is well supplied. So we think there's enough vaccine now for everybody who wants it.
And from a public health standpoint, is there any argument for making the flu shot free for anyone who wants it?
Well, I think the flu shots are free for everybody who has any chronic disease, everybody over 65, and the state and territory programs now make it available for people under 5, and they're also available for all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander programs, so that the government-funded program has been prioritised to those people at greatest risk. To make vaccines available on the National Immunisation Program, we have to go through a process of cost-effectiveness analysis through the Pharmaceutical Benefits Advisory Committee. And people will be making proposals, companies will be making proposals to expand that in the future. But there is a legislated process to approve that.
If you're just tuning in, this is RN Drive, and my guest is Professor Brendan Murphy, who's Australia's Chief Medical Officer. We're talking the unusually high numbers of flu for this flu season. 0418 226 576 is our text line. I wonder if you've been vaccinated yet or you're considering vaccination. On that issue of just this high level of flu vaccine, of course, you know, it's an obvious one, but again, I think the Victorian Health Minister has just come out and said, at least in Victoria, stay home. We always tell people to stay home, yet people don't. This is part of the issue, isn't it?
It can be, although flu is a very nasty illness. If you've really got full-blown flu, there's not much choice but to stay home for at least for the first few days, because you really find it hard to get out of bed. It's a very, very nasty illness. Many people use the term flu loosely when they've got a bad cold, but the real flu is a very significant illness, and most people do need to stay home. But we need to not only stay home, but keep away from spreading it to their family if possible. And certainly, you know, in aged care facilities, we're very keen for the staff to segregate and barrier people so that we don't spread the virus, because it is a very important part of the response, is to prevent transmission in the community.
And the other issue is the strength or the effectiveness of the vaccine. Now, I'm going to ask you this because I hear it anecdotally all the time. People saying, you know, I'm a mum of kids that are, you know, primary school age. Oh, look, you know, I've tried the flu shot before and it didn't stop me getting the flu, so it's not worth it. What do you say to people who are very sceptical of this particular vaccine?
Well, it's not a perfect vaccine. It doesn't guarantee prevention of flu infection, but it has a fairly good vaccine effectiveness for most strains of the virus in most people. And even if you do get flu when you've had the vaccine, it's often a much milder form. A lot of people who say, well, the vaccine didn't prevent me, may not have even had flu. They may have just had a bad cold and think they've had flu. So the flu virus is an incredibly variable beast. Flu viruses will mutate all the time. And so the flu strain has to be changed in the vaccine every year. And it's never perfect protection, but it's the best we've got, and it provides, for most people, pretty good vaccine protection. I have it every year. I've had it every year for 30 years, and I will continue to have it because I think it is my best chance of reducing my risk of getting flu.
It's been reported this morning that the government is considering a number of measures to reduce the overprescription of antibiotics, including changing how they're prescribed. Why do you need to do that, and what options are you looking at?
Well, one of the challenges with the problem of antibiotic resistance, antimicrobial resistance, where bugs developed resistance to commonly used antibiotics, and this is a serious international concern, and because new antibiotics aren't being produced very often these days, the ones we've got in some cases becoming less valuable as bugs produce resistance. And part of the cause of that is the overuse of antibiotics, particularly when they're used for circumstances when they're not needed. And one of the biggest problems we have in this country is people who have viral respiratory infections, like a bad cold or even an uncomplicated flu, where they believe implicitly that antibiotics are what helps them get over it, when it's really only time that's getting them over the infection. And we've have a very high rate of prescription of these antibiotics in primary care for people who have viral infections. The challenge then, of course, is that many of these antibiotics have an automatic repeat attached to the system that produces them. That's been introduced several years ago for convenience factors. And we've found that some people haven't used the repeat to extend this course, the initial course. What they've done is hold on to that repeat, and then 3 or 4 months later, they've gone and got another prescription of repeat of the antibiotics without seeing their doctor, without there being a good reason for having antibiotics and taking them, because they've got this mistaken belief that it'll help them get over a cold. So we're trying to produce, without being too bureaucratic, better controls over access to antibiotics so that they're used only when a doctor thinks that they are indicated for a bacterial infection or the prevention of a bacterial infection in some cases. So it's really just not regularising the supply arrangements so that people don't have ready access to repeats when they're not necessary.
So this is about slowing the spread of drug-resistant bacteria in Australia. How serious is that problem?
It is a very serious problem worldwide. It's one of the biggest international potential public health threats. There are already people in the world who have infections that are untreatable at times with antibiotics because the bugs they've got are resistant to all known effective antibiotics. Occasionally there might be one very toxic one that's available. We've seen in some parts of Australia outbreaks of in some healthcare facilities of highly resistant bugs that might only be sensitive to one or two antibiotics. And this could become a significant issue, and there is a real prospect in the future that we'll have increasing numbers of infections with bugs that are very, very hard to treat. Even now in parts of Asia, when we see people coming back who've been hospitalised in some Asian countries where there are high rates of resistance, we treat them as if they've got nasty resistant bugs. It's a significant problem, and part of the solution is making sure we only ever use antibiotics when they're absolutely necessary.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure.